WBAI's local station board candidates and to vote in this election, visit elections.pacifica.org. All ballots are due on Friday, October 15th. Make your voice heard.
And this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was a report to the listener. I should say WBAI's management report to the listener, and that will be heard periodically at whatever time. Just keep note of the time whenever it airs, because it's an important thing. It's 5 p.m. Stay tuned for Max Politics with Ben Max. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to Max Politics. This is Ben Max from Gotham Gazette. Thanks for joining me here on WBAI Radio 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. We are under 3 weeks until Election Day, which is Tuesday, November 2nd, 2021. Absentee balloting has begun. Early voting is coming up October 23rd through October 31st. The New York City election is upon us. Today on the show, a long, in-depth conversation with Curtis Sliwa, the Republican nominee for mayor. He's also on an independent ballot line on the general election ballot. A long talk with Curtis Sliwa. I had this conversation with Curtis late last night, which was exactly 3 weeks until Election Day. We spoke after he had had a long day on the campaign trail. It was a good time to catch up about a lot of things related to his campaign, his past, his platform, the ways that he's trying to differentiate himself from Democratic nominee Eric Adams. You'll hear a lot in this interview about how Curtis Sliwa is framing his campaign, trying to convince Democrats to go with him over Eric Adams, because he'll need a sizable chunk of Democrats to vote for him, as well as Republicans and independents, if he's going to pull off what would be a significant upset here in this election. Although, as you'll hear Sliwa say, we don't really know how this election is going. He is frustrated with media narratives around the election. We haven't had any polling on the general election, and there's a lot at stake here, obviously, for New York City. But given the drastic voter enrollment differential for Democrats to Republicans, Eric Adams is treated like a significant frontrunner in this race, which he probably is. But again, there's a lot we don't know, especially when you have a New York character like Curtis Sliwa with very high name recognition around the city, not seen as a traditional Republican, really, or a Democrat for that matter. And he thinks, you know, that's part of the key to his campaign. Just so everybody listening knows, invitation is out to Eric Adams to come back on the show. We obviously had him on during the primary. Would like to have Eric Adams back potentially next week. So trying to work that out with his campaign. And we'll see if we can have a good long talk with him as well leading up to the general election. There's other candidates on the ballot too. We've got a lot of that information over at Gotham Gazette where you can find it. Here's my conversation with mayoral candidate Curtis Sliwa. Curtis Sliwa, how are you?
Oh, busy, busy, busy. Going on the clock, as you mentioned, with just about 3 weeks to go. I'm good to go.
All right. We're talking here after 9 p.m. on Tuesday, October 12th, to tell everybody. Appreciate you fitting me in on a little bit of short notice. Give people a quick glimpse of what a day, you know, what today was like. Today and tonight, I guess. I'm sure you were doing things tonight. What's the campaign trail look like 3 weeks from Election Day for you?
Well, I started out early. I had visitors to the apartment I live in and share with my wife, Nancy, who, by the way, is running in the Upper West Side for the vacated city council seat.
I just moderated a debate between her and Gail Brewer.
Yeah, and she told me.
Yes, so that'll be coming live soon, yeah.
Yeah, she told me the highlight of that was she had to break up a cat fight.
Yes.
in the apartment between our 17 rescue cats while engaging in the debate with you.
Yes.
I'm sure that like one of the most unusual debates you've ever hosted. Yeah.
We couldn't see the cat fight on the screen, so we only got a word of mouth report on the cat fight, and that got edited out of the debate. So,
but the day started early. AP reporter and photographer were visiting the apartment, seeing what life like with the Sliwas is. It's a 328 square foot apartment on the Upper West Side, studio apartment on the ground level, and what it's like caring for 17 rescue cats. From there, I had to head up to Harlem. Meet with multiple pastors who are going to have me as guests in the upcoming weeks. And then over to Washington Heights, outside of the old theater in which Reverend Ike used to broadcast from, right in the shadow of the George Washington Bridge. And we had our Democrats for Sliwa announcement and also the playing of the first TV ad that debuted today, Democrats for Sliwa. From there, we toured Washington Heights. Then jumped on the train out to Astoria, totally different population, walked in what I call AOC land, met with a number of small business people, and then the Hispanic Society of Correctional Officers dealing with the crisis of Rikers Island and just the general situation involving no bail situations, defund the police, defund prisons. So it's been quite a night. And obviously, now talking to you in your podcast.
All right. Well, that's the day in the life of a candidate, at least someone who's hustling. And this is the day after Columbus Day, also known to many now as Indigenous Peoples Day, which was a big day for you. This is sort of prime Curtis Sliwa out on the trail. There's some culture war stuff there. There's some bumbling Bill de Blasio territory for you to tread there, right? I mean, yesterday was a pretty big day for you on the campaign trail.
Actually, the day before it started in the Bronx, they had their annual Columbus Day parade up in the area along White Plains Road and Morris Park. And the mayor got booed, even in the rain. I mean, they were relentless, but that was just a precursor to the restart of the annual Columbus Day Parade on Fifth Avenue. And I mean, the crowd was all over de Blasio. I was having a great time reconnecting with a lot of people that I've marched with in the past. Eric Adams was MIA. I don't know why. He was expected to be at the march. He basically had no comments. And it was the day that I announced that out of the 33 cities that had taken down their Christopher Columbus statues, many of whom had put them in mothballs or in warehouses, that I felt the one place that was most in need of a Christopher Columbus statue was Staten Island, the most Italian-American per capita of boroughs, a place where they still look forward to celebrating Columbus Day. And I started going through a laundry list of cities whose statues are no longer seen in public, and suggested that when I'm mayor, I would seek to get one of those statues and put it on Highland Boulevard in Newdorp Lane so it could be on public view or out at Mount Laredo. I think most people don't know that there are existent Christopher Columbus statues in Astoria, Cadman Plaza in Brooklyn. There's a bust of Christopher Columbus on Belmont Arthur Avenue that the Albanians look after now in the Bronx. And, of course, the big statue in Columbus Circle.
When you approach these issues, do you approach it from something of a sort of radio host showman point of view where you're riling people up about something that they're riled up about and it gets into everybody's cultural heritage and it's kind of a moment to, really sort of, tickle people's intensity, or is this something that you take, very seriously?
No, I take it seriously. On my mother's side, she was raised from parents, my grandparents, who were from Andria and Bari, so they're Bari's. She was the only one born here in America, and that's the family I was raised with. The Polish side of my family, my dad's side, is from Chicago. But I understand there are some people who no longer want to have a Columbus Day, that's fine. If they want to honor the indigenous peoples or do both simultaneously, I'm all for that. I just think that in some places it represents not a tribute necessarily to Christopher Columbus, but rather to the accomplishments and the contributions of Italian Americans to building up America. In my grandparents, especially my grandfather, Fidel Bianchino, who could not read or write and was a ditch digger, helped dig Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, now the Carey Tunnel, when many Italian Americans were perishing because of collapses underneath the East River when it was being constructed. I see them as being the equivalent of what Mexicans and Central Americans are now. Southern Italians did all the grunt work, got no respect, were constantly stereotyped. And this is happening now amongst Mexicans and Central Americans, who themselves will do all the grunt work and are now being elevated to the point where they're beginning to celebrate their own holidays right here in America, right here in the tri-state area and right here in the city of New York.
All right. So zoom out for me. How's the campaign going, your assessment, 3 days from Election Day? I got to say, you've raised, you know, a pretty good chunk of change, well over $1.1 million as of the last filing in private donations from almost 9,000 contributors, an average of just $113 a contribution. You've gotten another almost $3 million in public matching funds. So you've got some money to spend here. You're up on TV. You've got other ads going on. But, you know, there's this narrative, and certainly in writing we've done at Gotham Gazette, we've put it this way too. But, you know, there's this narrative that Eric Adams is pretty much all but certain to win this race. So how's it going? Where do things stand? Is the media treating you the right way? You're sort of a member of the media in a way. You're definitely a member of the media as a radio show host, but not, you know, the sort of journalistic press covering politics. But how's the campaign going? What are people getting right and wrong here?
Well, number one, you announced exactly what my average donation is. It's more like the Bernie Sanders of this election cycle. You look at Eric Adams. My God, he's like swimming with developers, Fortune 500, elite businessmen and women, and the hedge fund monsters. Guy went out and raised $5 million, even though he capped out on matchable donations. So you say, wait a second. What are you raising all that money for? You can't use it in the election cycle. Here we go again, building up a slush fund, which just empowers him all the more, win, lose, or draw. And in terms of the mainstream media, from day one, they've said, oh, Curtis Lee has no chance to win. Wow, that's really great at promoting democracy. I didn't know they're handicappers. Where's the poll? Ben Max, has there been one poll?
There hasn't been a poll here. I just did a TV spot earlier with Pix 11, and I said I'd love to see a poll, but we don't have a poll, so it's hard to know exactly how this race is going. Even with a poll, you take those with a grain of salt, but it'd be nice to see a poll. But yeah, no, we don't know here. We don't really know. The biggest thing people are going on, obviously, is the voter enrollment, imbalance. The fact that there's so many more Democrats than Republicans. There's even more blanks than Republicans in New York City at this point.
Right, but think of it, Ben. I am not your Republican candidate. I mean, I had Fernando Mateo in the primary, who I beat, $2 million in the last 10 days. He got matchable donations. I got bupkis because I didn't qualify. And all of his ads said Curtis Lee was not a Republican. He's a never Trumper. And all of that was true. Mm-hmm. I still beat him by 70% to 30%. That meant a lot of Trumpers overlooked that and decided I should be the Republican candidate. I think based on what I've done in the city for 42 years, especially with a focus on public safety. But a lot of other people don't realize I'm the independent candidate. That's something that Michael Bloomberg spent millions and millions of dollars to get, that party line. I just went out there and got the signatures to qualify. And Ben, which party do you think tried to deny me and challenge my signatures for an independent party line? Which party?
The independent party?
No.
The Republican party?
My own Republican. Yeah. Because the Republicans are constantly at conflict with one another. They don't like the fact that I come from an independent background. I was the New York State Reform Party chairman for 3 years. They don't like the fact that I'm an ever-Trumper. They don't like the fact that I'm promoting universal basic income on a trial basis after having massive discussions with the Yang Gang. They don't like a number of my initiatives that they find to be way too progressive, way too liberal, and I just label them as being common sense and all the more ready to experiment because I don't think either party at times has come up with any answers. And how are we going to really know, Ben, until we actually experiment with some of these ideas and see where it leads us?
Mm-hmm. What kind of ideas? A UBI trial? What else? What do you put out there that's sort of not a typical Republican stance that you want people to know about?
NYCHA housing. I don't believe in this public partnership arrangement. Remember, they're selling air rights. Yeah, air rights. Yeah, they really have in mind keeping the residents in public housing, especially those valuable plots of land along the East River on both sides. If you look at where some of these public housing complexes are, Queensbridge, you look at Redfern, you look at Astoria over on the Queens side, you look over on the east side from the lower portion of the East River all the way up to Harlem. There's no doubt in my mind that there's a plan eventually to try to dislodge residents and move them in a different direction. I don't know what the overall plan is, but I know that in everything that they've attempted to do with NYCHA, it's failed. And these are by men who originally knew how to run public housing, because remember, Cuomo had been secretary of HUD under the Clinton administration. De Blasio was his assistant. So they have no excuses. And many of the proposals that I have seen do not seem to incorporate in the residents themselves to make decisions, to be the tenant managers, to get involved in sweat equity where they get trained vocationally in the housing complex themselves to be available like a custodian in a private building would be to fix, to be a carpenter, electrician, a plumber. So that it's constantly in-house as opposed to always outsourcing it and never seeming to be able to deliver on the promises the government made. Look, I saw the original public housing project. I was introduced to that by my father. Chester was a merchant seaman for 55 years and raised me on Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. And he said, kid, you see that public housing project that was set up by Fiorello LaGuardia and FDR, and that was at about 1935. It's a low-rise public housing complex that's in the Lower East Side. And he talked to me about how important it was because it was a step up from the tenements. It was a step up from living in an area where there were squalid conditions. And I think the Jack Kemp approach would have been much better. He originally was the secretary of HUD, appointed by Ronald Reagan, former congressman of Erie County. And he came up with a great idea. Why not let residents have some equity? With small amounts of money, they could buy the actual apartments, like it would a condo. When most residents in New York City understand that most residents in public housing pay rent. They don't live there freely. And let them have a little ownership. Well, guess who opposed Jack Kemp? Was it the Democrats? No. It was the Republicans. Mm-hmm. This was a great idea. And it's one that I'd like to carry into New York City's responsibility to NYCHA.
His tenant... the opportunity for tenant ownership of NYCHA apartments.
And tenant management, on-site tenant management. Let the people who live in that particular public housing complex actually make the decisions. I get the impression that we don't trust people in public housing to be able to make good decisions to manage themselves. Oh, wow. NYCHA's done a wonderful job. Trump and Ben Carson wanted nothing to do with it. De Blasio wanted nothing to do with it. The people who live in public housing say, give us a chance to do something about it. Oh, we can't trust you. You're not educated enough. Remember, we brought in that guy from Minneapolis. I forget his name.
Yeah, Greg Russ.
Right. I guess he was such a Mashiach of public housing that we would allow him to fly to Minneapolis on Friday, come back on Monday. Like we couldn't find somebody in the city who knew more about public housing than him. How ridiculous.
Let me ask you this. The let's say $40 billion in physical needs that NYCHA, has to get things up to a state of good repair. how do you get to that number along with the possibility of letting some residents, you know, put equity in to buy a stake in their apartments? How do you get to that number?
Well, Ben, 95% of the monies to run the NYCHA housing complexes, which house about 400,000 people, there are about 300 complexes of all different sizes, comes from the federal government. Mm-hmm. We're getting the money from the federal government. They don't seem to care about it, and New York City mismanages it. So I think you've got to sit down with the federal government and say, hey, look, let's come up with a much better way of getting more, a better bang for the dollar that you, the taxpayers, meaning at the federal level, are investing in the nation's largest public housing complex series of homes for tenants of public housing in the nation. Queensbridge alone. You go to Queensbridge, which is right there in the shadow of the 59th Street Bridge. It's two separate public housing units, the largest public housing unit in America. And you say, now, wait a second, these people are not capable of managing and running their own public housing project. Continue the federal support, continue the city support, and let's have and trust in the residents of public housing, which we don't have. It's clear we don't have it.
Mm-hmm. So let me zoom back out to the campaign in terms of how it's going. You're talking about, you know, being a potential crossover candidate. It sounds like you might have a lot of Republicans who might, you know, not even come out to vote for you the way you describe your relationship with them. I don't even, you know, I don't know how much that's going to hold you back given the numbers, but, you know, you need as many Republicans to come out as possible. You need as many independents to swing your way as possible and actually come out to vote. And then you need a whole bunch of sort of conservative and moderate Democrats and maybe some, you know, as you said, you've been sort of courting the Yang gang. You maybe need a lot of Andrew Yang voters, but you need sort of this mix of voters. How is it going sort of trying to attract this strange brew that you need?
Well, let's bifurcate it. In reference to Republicans, it is the most difficult group to deal with because they don't trust the balloting system. Mm-hmm. They really say to me, they say, Curtis, I love you. I support you. I just don't trust the way elections take place and the way ballots are counting. So I have to spend most of my time explaining to them, hey, do you like playing cards? Yes. Do you go to Atlantic City on the buses? Yes. Do you think you get cheated? Yes. Do you keep going back and playing cards? Yes. I say, so why don't you think about it in the same way you think about playing cards and understand that if you don't vote, I'm guaranteed to lose. I am not one who distrusts the balloting system and the way ballots are counted. I said from day one that President Donald Trump lost the election fair and square to President Joe Biden. So I differ with some Republicans on that. I have a much better relationship with independents than Eric Adams does because he's a party apparatchik. He drove Andrew Yang out of the Democratic Party. He cast dispersions against him, called him a snake oil salesman, a charlatan because of his support of UBI. When Andrew Yang teamed up with Kathleen Garcia, which is the whole goal of ranked choice voting, of which I supported and promoted the initiative and referendum when I was chairman of the New York State Reform Party on June 19th, he said that they were racist for doing that. That's the purpose of ranked choice voting, is to team up so you're not as adversarial against one another. But you see, if it doesn't go Eric Adams' way, the knee-jerk reaction is always to call you a racist. So I think I have a better sort of understanding of independence. And as you mentioned, there are moderate Democrats out there who are not necessarily happy in the direction of the city, and they see Eric Adams as potentially just more of a Cuomo de Blasio 2.0. And again, I can go into inner city areas. There is no Republican before, whether Bloomberg with his millions, Rudy Giuliani on the Law and Order platform, who has been able to campaign in neighborhoods where the only Republican they ever saw was Abraham Lincoln on a $5 bill. My job is I got to get them to vote because they're not prime voters. They generally come out and only vote in presidential elections. Eric Adams' job is to get Democrats to come out and vote who already think that he's the mayor because the media has bent over backwards to do a coronation of Eric Adams. I'm surprised that he hasn't heard from Pope Francis yet for beatification, you know, for sainthood. It's an outrage. This is a democracy. This is I wish a multiple party system. I want more independent parties. That's why I support Andrew Yang's creation of the Forward Party. We need more dialogue, more debates, more parties, and more ideas. Coming out of the Democrat and Republican parties of late, there have been a dearth of ideas, and they go out of their way to squash third parties, which I've always been a member of. And as you know, if not for the vengeance of Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, who wanted to take out the Working Families Party, how dare they support Cynthia Nixon? He, too, who thought he should have a coronation, he only empowered them because they did the right thing. They organized. They got the required new amount of votes as he raised the threshold. So now you only have the Conservative Party, Working Families Party, gone, Independence Party, Green Party, Libertarian Party, right. Reform Party. We don't have online ballot status. That was un disgraziato, what Cuomo did. And they let him get away with that in the state legislature.
The Yeah, no, that was obviously a political vendetta at play there. The let me ask you this. I've been wanting to ask you this for a while. You must have been rooting for, let's say, Maya Wiley in the Democratic primary, right? I mean, Eric Adams is sort of a really tough draw for you in the general election. Wouldn't you have preferred to go up against here someone, you know, much further left because you can, you know, sort of talk to the middle of the road, and you are, you know, have been an independent political figure, and you are stressing public safety, but Eric Adams comes out of this primary. That's a tough draw for you, no?
There's no doubt. Eric Adams poses many more problems politically for me in the general election than Maya Wiley would have. Mm-hmm. That would have been a natural matchup of people who probably only agreed on one thing, that Eric Adams should not always be talking about, hey, I'm going to strap on my nine. I wear bulletproof vests. I mean, this guy has an obsession with guns. That's about the only thing we would have agreed on, is that Eric Adams, stop talking about carrying guns. Don't carry guns. Try to be a role model, especially to young men of color. You can't be a role model if all of a sudden you're always talking about bulletproof vests and carrying guns and how if there's an intel threat against you, you're going to strap on your nine. Sends the absolute wrong message. That's the only thing that I and Maya Wiley would have ever agreed on, is that, hey, stop carrying guns, except the exception would be the police need to carry guns.
The what you just mentioned there, do you consider yourself a role model to young people? You know, you've had issues you've apologized for in the past. You know, you've done a lot of interviews lately. I don't want people to be, this obviously won't, you know, shouldn't be the only interview people listen to or the only, you know, people need to read up on you. I'm not going to go through some of the greatest hits that you've been covering with people like Errol Lewis. You know, that was a really good conversation on his podcast, and you've had some profiles in, you know, different publications. So I don't want to go through all the same stuff, but, you know, you've had issues in the past, fabricating some exploits back with the Guardian Angels. You've apologized for those, you know, pretty insensitive comments that, you know, have gotten you in some hot water. You've also, you know, issued some apologies on. Do you consider yourself a good role model for kids?
I try, but I believe in if you mess up, you fess up. And I certainly had to do my fair share of making apologies. Don't know of Eric Adams, who is very omnipotent, very pretentious. Other than the one time he was sort of put into a corner many years ago, when he suggested that my friend and a good supporter of I and the Guardian Angels, Herman Badillo, was wrong to marry outside of his Hispanic heritage. But he shouldn't have married a Jewish woman at that time, Gail Badillo. Mm-hmm. He did eventually apologize for that, but didn't come as soon as it should have. He's just not a guy who apologizes, even when confronted with a mistake. The most recent time, although it was a feeble apology, and I'm sure this applies to some of your listeners, he was telling people, hey, go back to Iowa, go back to Ohio. You know, New York City is for the people who made it the great city that it is, basically saying to white hipsters and millennials, get the hell out of here. And he did that at the National Action Network of Al Sharpton. He did a feeble apology after that.
And you're listening to Max Politics here on WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. This is Ben Max from Gotham Gazette. We're in the midst of my interview with mayoral candidate Curtis Sliwa. We had this discussion just last night after a full day and evening of campaigning for Sliwa as he tries to pull off this upset here in the general election for mayor here in 2021. More of my conversation with Curtis Sliwa right now. Hold on, Curtis, you move pretty quickly from saying you try and that you apologize for some of the things you've done to going after Eric Adams. Point taken. But in terms of yourself as a role model, I mean, what, you know, how do you think about that? I mean, you obviously, you have kids, you've had, you know, your own personal stories and issues with your personal life in the newspapers. Maybe some of that you've enjoyed having, but, you know, in other ways, you've had some painful episodes in your personal life. How are you feeling about where you're at now? I mean, are you a different person than you were decades ago or even a few years ago?
Of course. You go through a maturing point. You go through a point where you recognize that some of the things you may have done and some of the things you said were immature. But I think in terms of role model effect, I've proven to be a role model for especially a lot of young men and young women who have joined the ranks of the Guardian Angels both here and in 13 countries and 130 cities, especially the philosophy that I've lived to the max. Get it, Ben Max? I guess that didn't quite work out.
I've heard it before, yeah.
Right, but not to carry weapons. Mm-hmm. That is not the sign of machismo. I was shot, as you know, by the Gottis to the Gambinos. They gave them the orders 5 times with hollow point bullets. I could have had a carry permit provided by the NYPD. I said, no, it's not a proper role model. You have to advocate that young men especially not carry weapons, that they don't shoot weapons, and obviously they don't get shot like myself. The goal is not to get shot, not to have a weapon, and not to shoot people. And I think you got to live the life in order to get across to a young man that. And I don't think Eric Adams and a lot of other people live the life because it's a double standard. Do as I say, but not as I do.
Listen, I'm not going to, you know, I'm obviously, I haven't so far in this discussion, I'm not going to throughout it, but, you know, I'm not going to give you the Eric Adams side of the story. But on this one, you know, you did say that with an exception, police carry guns. I mean, Eric Adams spent 2 decades in the PD, right? So, I mean, he, you know, this is, it's a little bit of a different story than if you were, you know, up against a different Democratic nominee. You know, if Bill de Blasio was out there saying, I'm going to carry a gun around, that'd be a little different story than Eric Adams.
Well, let me ask you a question. When's the last time that anybody assaulted a mayor, threw a pie at him, anything that threatened their life?
We just went through this with the mayor and his issues with his, you know, abusing his police detail and, you know, questions around threats to him. But Let's come on, Ben. All right. You talk a lot in your campaign about compassion, about compassionate solutions. I want to know a little bit more about what that means to you and what are some of the specifics that you can tell people about the compassionate solutions to the city's problems that you would put forward as mayor. What's under that category?
Well, you know, the teachings and the belief of Mahatma Gandhi early on were that a society that does not treat its animals well will not treat its people well. And we see that. So I'm the first candidate to advocate for no-kill shelters for our animal care and control shelters. Right now, if a animal that is surrendered, dog or cat, another animal is not claimed, generally within 72 hours, they are destroyed. They are euthanized. That's not going to happen any longer. And I've been in these shelters. And many of them are just abysmal. So we're going to deal with that reality. Secondly, we look at the emotionally disturbed persons who I've worked with closely for 42 years. Many of them I've known personally and had conversations with and developed friendships with. And you see that when the lockdown and pandemic came, there was an immediate moval attempt to free up as many beds as possible in the state hospitals, municipal hospitals, and the private psychiatric care hospitals. And I get it. We needed the beds. People were dying. They were being swallowed up in ICUs and put on ventilators, and we didn't have enough beds. But once we began to stabilize, Ben, there was no attempt to get these people back in and give them the mental health care that they deserve. the medicine they needed to normalize them. And so they were left to roam the streets, the parks, the subways, a danger to themselves and everyone else. A compassionate society would not allow that. When the lockdown and pandemic came, people were complaining because they saw emotionally disturbed persons defecating and urinating in public. And I turned to them and the officials and said, well, what do you expect them to do? They closed all the laboratories. They padlocked all the public laboratories.
That's right.
These poor souls to eliminate, even billionaires have to eliminate. So the way you deal with the emotionally disturbed is you approach them. If necessary, you take them in for a psychiatric observation. If two psychiatrists are in agreement, they can be held for 90 days for further observation. If they haven't been normalized in that time after getting fresh clothes, you know, being able to escape the streets or the subways, then there's the role of possibly committing them to a state psychiatric facility. Very little, if any, of that is taking place. And actually, there's the problem of the homeless. Bill de Blasio, our mayor, even acknowledged recently on the Brian Lehrer show that that was his biggest failure, having Stephen Banks as the czar of homeless services, an abysmal failure, as we now learn that a lot of the work was outsourced to nonprofits, which were just opportunities for families to enrich themselves, and there was no oversight at all. So what I would like to try, recognizing that this is an enormous problem, is to actually reestablish the Camp LaGuardia scenario that occurred in Orange County in the Depression by Fiorello LaGuardia and praised by FDR that he actually used it to house his conservation corps, which then became a national role model for success. Unfortunately, having these single able-bodied men, many of them that had alcohol problems, some had drug problems, but many emotional issues, was not followed through on by administrations thereafter. But the idea was a great one, and this would be done on a volunteer basis to single able-bodied men or single able-bodied women who would like to sort of go on a retreat. It's almost like Outward Bound. Give them an opportunity to escape all the temptations that exist in the city. That's one thing that I would implement. And then obviously shelters would not just be a place where you got to check in by 10 at night because that's the curfew and you get kicked out to the street at 7:30 with no programs on site for alcohol problems, drug problems, and emotional issues.
How do you get people into housing, though? I mean, you know, what you got, let's say 60,000 people sleeping in city shelters. You become mayor on January 1st. How do you get those people into stable housing?
Well, all you got to do, man, is look around in the city. They're still building housing, upscale housing that's never going to be used. There's too much of a supply and not enough of a demand. And there's millions of square feet of what were originally thought to be commercial space that are empty. You have areas that are zoned exclusively for manufacturing. There's very little of that done any longer. You can change the zoning for that. And you can create the affordable housing. Look at the Hudson Yards. They're still building in the Hudson Yards because these were business deals that were negotiated and the monies were appropriated through loans before the lockdown. And empty. What are we going to do? Turn them into mausoleums because we've run out of cemetery space, or more, you know, like the old factories we turned into places where you do storage for those that have separation anxiety? There's plenty of potential space. We just got to repurpose it. And we don't need to develop new projects in Sunnyside Yards and Sunset Park in Brooklyn. How about just why? Where's there a demand?
I guess part of that would depend on your repurposing plan. I mean, you know, if that were to be plausible and effective, then maybe you don't need to build a good bit more housing, but you probably do anyway. I mean, the city's we're already seeing a rebound from COVID in terms of the real estate market and rental market and all of this that, you know, shows the city on the rebound again and, you know, in no way, shape or form.
I know, Ben, but there is this pension. Oh, there's always got to be an increase in population. If you decrease in population, you're a failing city or a failing state. What? Whoever wrote that? I mean, the quality of life is actually better when you have less people. One thing the lockdown and the pandemic taught us is that people, many of them actually preferred working at home, spending more time with their families, having a better quality of life. Yet we want to bring everyone back into the city, fill up those high-rise buildings, be like sardines in tin cans for 2 hours, transporting yourself one way and transporting yourself out. Give you an example. You go to the South Shore of Staten Island. I could more readily jump on the South Expressway, go over the Outer Bridge Crossing, take the New Jersey Turnpike to the Garden State Parkway, to the Atlantic City Expressway, and be shooting craps in a casino in Atlantic City before I could actually take a different route to get to Midtown Manhattan. Why are we pushing this when so many people are able to work at home, want to work at home? Why do we feel that we have to go back to what used to be, especially now with all the e-commerce? It's going to be very difficult to open up all the mom and pop shops that used to exist.
Interesting theory about the and beliefs about the future of the city and the possible preferences of the next mayor if you're elected. Let me ask you the focus on animals. I'm an animal lover. I think there's a lot of people, most people I think are animal lovers. Some people prefer dogs. Some people prefer cats. You're obviously a cat person, but it seems to me, even as an animal lover, like almost a disproportionate focus on animals as you're running to be mayor of New York City, home to 8+ million human beings. What am I missing? Why is this such a focus for you?
Well, because look, you want to argue with anyone, he's no longer alive. Mahatma Gandhi said it all. It's something that I believed in for quite some time. Before I met my wife, Nancy, I was not as engrossed in this whole concept, but she taught me more and more about managing feral colonies of cats that can keep the rat, the rodent, and mice population down naturally, and most importantly, rescuing animals that are under the threat of being destroyed by a shelter system that could find other ways of finding them a home of their own. And I saw the correlation. Look how we treat emotionally disturbed persons. We had Thrive, 5 years, $1.25 billion. The mayor put together this program, had his wife through nepotism run it. What have they ever done? They won't even be accountable for the money spent. And because it's a one-party town, there's no balance. So that even the people could have investigated it, Scott Stringer never used subpoena power. City Council never used subpoena power. Tish James never used subpoena power. It was probably the most egregious misuse of funding for a desperately in need population. Ben, can you point to me one success story from Thrive that we've ever learned about over 5 years?
Well, I mean, listen, I think there's some nonprofit organizations that have said, they've appreciated the funding to do, mental health trainings and such. But I'm not at all going to argue with you that it's been a well-run program. We were one of the first at Gotham Gazette to do a story about how they weren't measuring the results, and we didn't even know what we were getting for all this money and all this, attention that they put on this big program. So I'm certainly not going to defend Thrive.
I'll give you an example, Ben. About 2 weeks ago, Eric Adams was on with Coffee Joe on MSNBC in the morning with Reverend Al Sharpton. Mm-hmm. We're talking about homelessness and emotionally disturbed. And then out of nowhere, voluntarily, Eric Adams said, what I really think was a mistake, Joe, is that when they closed Willowbrook out on Staten Island almost a lifetime ago, and my head spun around like Linda Blair in The Exorcist, I said, look, Eric is not a hipster or a millennial. He grew up at the time of Willowbrook. He's in his 60s. I'm 67. Not only was that inhumane, they were testing on these young children and these young adults who had intellectual disabilities. They were injecting them with hepatitis for 12 years. That's like Dr. Mengele. And he's saying, oh, it was just a few bad apples. Robert Kennedy, when he was U.S. Senator, said it was abominable. It should be closed. And the state kept it open. More people suffered there.
But you also want to
keep that open.
Right. But I mean, perhaps. But you want to increase institutionalization, right? You want to go not necessarily to the degree it was when the deinstitutionalization movement really took hold, but you want to go back towards that. I mean, that's a key tenet of your platform, right? Is that more people do need to be in institutional settings, no?
Well, especially if they don't have a family or if families are incapable of caring for them, and especially if it requires them being medicated by someone because they either are unwilling to get medicated or they won't continue on with their medication. But I got to tell you, Ben, out of all the examples to use, Willowbrook.
Right.
Even his hardcore supporters, Eric Adams supporters, say, "Guy, that is a horrible idea." He never walked it back.
Mm-hmm.
Why? He could have walked it back. We all make mistakes. I've made mistakes on the campaign trail, but he wouldn't walk it back.
Right. Speaking of treatment of people going through psychiatric issues, emotionally disturbed people, you had this individual who interrupted a press conference and you comforted him. And then that scene is now in an advertisement of yours. Was that sequence staged in any way?
No, it wasn't staged. And you can see there's a history of me coming to the aid of emotionally disturbed persons or those who are drugged out or in need of medication to stabilize them. It's what I've done for 42 years.
Sure. You clearly have a lot of experience working with every type of person you encounter on the streets of the city.
Yeah, but I think, Ben, with the emotionally disturbed, it can be very frightening. That's why I am a believer that when the EDPs calls come in, 911 calls, and you can hear them on police scanners, there's so many of them, that in each precinct, there should be a team of mental health experts who can assist police, who can go out on the calls with them. They take the lead. They do the main intervention. The police stay back. The police only get involved if things get out of hand, which sometimes when someone's having a psychotic disorder, that can happen. Now,
you and Eric Adams sound alike on this issue and among several.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, but you remember it was Bill de Blasio who wanted to do that 2 years ago and not have the police respond and you never did it. So on that, I would agree. I think that's common sense. It's the same way when somebody reports to be sick, physically sick, you'll see an FDNY EMT unit go out on the call and sometimes even a fire truck from a nearby fire station. The more people, the better in dealing with people with these issues because it helps to rapidly deal with a problem that can only get worse. Living in a street, in a subway, in a park, it'd be hard enough if you had control of your mental or physical faculties, but having problems, it just exacerbates the situation.
We're in our last few minutes here with Curtis Sliwa, mayoral candidate, of course, the Republican nominee, having won that primary fairly easily. Let me ask you, that gentleman, did you help him get some help? Do you know what happened to him after that encounter you had with him that, you know, is now in your advertisements that are up on TV?
Yeah, over 6 years, we as the Guardian Angels have helped him from time to time. Unfortunately, he has been cut loose. He actually told his story that he has been hospitalized in Bellevue on a number of occasions. He had indicated what prescriptions he should be taking, and he didn't have access to them. Mm-hmm. We've helped to the best of our ability, but we don't have the ability that, let's say, the police would or mental health care experts associated with the Department of Health.
Sure.
Could then get a psych evaluation of him at a hospital. And then if two psychiatrists agreed that he should be temporarily committed for 90 days until they make a broader report on his condition. Yeah, we've been down the road with him and some others at the height of the pandemic, at the height of the lockdown. We were actually escorting some of the emotionally disturbed living in Penn Station all the way over to Bellevue, the psychiatric hospital, primarily to use the bathroom, then to get their medication refilled up if they were without or for a psych evaluation.
So last couple of questions and I'll let you go. Appreciate the time, of course, especially at the end of a long day during another long week, long months here, long campaign. We've gone through some of the things you're running on. We're not doing a lot of policy talk here. We're talking more, you know, views of the city, your background, how you think about things, the politics of it all. Obviously, people can look at your website. I've been reviewing a lot of your policy proposals throughout, and then in preparation for this conversation. So there's a lot we're not getting to. Obviously, everybody listening knows that there's only so much we can get to here. But you know, you have plenty of planks to your policy platform, and people can check that out. Let me ask you this: you have two TV debates coming up, October 20th and 26th. One of those right before early voting starts. One of those right in the middle of early voting. How important are those debates to your chances here? How are you thinking about those? What are you going to be like on the debate stage in the, you know, your first run for mayor here, the general election, big stage? How are you thinking about those debates, and what can we expect to see from you there?
Well, they're extraordinarily important because I've not had the same access to media, the same access that Eric Adams had in a long and heated Democratic primary campaign involving ranked choice voting. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I was not able to be involved in ranked choice voting because my opponent, Fernando Mateo, knocked off the other candidate who would have put us at least in position of having three candidates. So I intend on taking it to Eric Adams because I believe he's been insulated by the media from questions that need to be asked. A, don't you find it odd, Ben, that after all this time, we still don't know where the guy lives?
Well, let me just say this.
That's a bit odd after all this time.
We know about his residency questions because of the media. So I don't know if you can criticize the media and then say it's, you know, we got to find out more about the residency stuff. That wouldn't even be talked about if it wasn't for the media.
Politico first yes. Broke the story. Yes. Andrew Yang made it a key piece. But let's face it, Eric Adams has vacillated on this. He vacillated on where he went on a vacation. Had to be dragged out of him. He went to Monaco. Who goes to Monaco?
But you're criticizing the guy for where he goes on vacation?
Well, wait a second. He's been hanging out at Zero Bond, the club, hanging with the TikTok girls, keeping up with the Kardashians. Uh-huh. You're not at all concerned, Ben, that all of a sudden this guy is with the heavy hitters, the whales. He's getting wine-dined in pocket line and bought. Let's face it.
Hey, listen, Eric Adams. Eric Adams is a complicated guy. He's running a very interesting campaign where he's clearly cozied up to many elites. And then he's also clearly speaking to a lot of working class New Yorkers. You know, he had all those labor union endorsements in the primary. You know, this is a guy who, I mean, he's running he's casting a wide net, just like you're trying to cast a wide net. So I don't know. You know, there's still stuff about his residency, his taxes. There's certainly questions he still needs to answer.
Oh, and the other one that I'm going to pose to him, because I can't give you a straight answer, is early on, he was constantly with the Nation of Islam promoting their security patrols, claiming that's the only sort of involvement he had with them. He was an admirer of their security patrols. Hey, Eric, you know, the Nazis had good security patrols also, and they hated everybody like the Nation of Islam. Why would you have anything to do with a group led by Farrakhan that hates Jews, hates whites, hates transgenders, hates gays, hates lesbians, and use as your an excuse? Well, they ran good safety patrols. Come on. And the media lets them get away with that?
You're taking us back here to the 90s?
Well, haven't you taken me back to the formation of
No, I'm just making sure that that's what you're
1979, 1980, Ben?
That's what you're talking about. No, that's what you're saying you're going to bring up at the debate. I'm just making sure that that's
straight
what
up.
All right, so you
about
so,
Farrakhan.
So these are a few things.
Why is it the media gives him a pass?
Mm-hmm. Well, we at Gotham Gazette, other publications have written profiles on him that mention, you know, he's had a very long and complicated public life like yourself. There's been some ups and downs, some, you know, question marks. And there's been a lot of profiles on him that have mentioned these things, issues throughout the year. So there's a few things you're going to bring up at the debates. If at the debates, other than these things about his character, his residency, et cetera, is there one difference between you and Eric Adams that you want to make sure voters are going to come away with from those debates? Is there one thing about being mayor that you're going to try to show a differentiation on?
Well, of course, because remember, Eric Adams was embraced by Cuomo and Eric Adams embraced Cuomo. Mm-hmm. Likewise with de Blasio. So why would people think they're going to get any different kind of leadership when it's Cuomo and de Blasio 2.0 with slight distinctions? But look at what Eric Adams has already said. I want to keep Stephen Banks on as the leader of my homeless scenario of trying to get homeless people into affordable housing. You're going to use the failed leader of the homeless cycle of homelessness that even de Blasio admitted was his worst blunder. There are many things that he says that it's just a continuation of the status quo.
Okay.
I'm just going to say to people out there, based on my 42-year track record, who will you feel safer with? Who will make you safer in New York City? Eric Adams or Curtis Sliwa? And then let the voters decide.
All right. There's a preview of the argument we're going to see in these two TV debates coming up. A few things you plan to raise about Eric Adams and the distinction you're trying to make. All right. We're going to leave it there, Curtis Sliwa. I appreciate the time, and we'll check in with you before Election Day.
I do appreciate that. Thanks for the time, Ben.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
And I hope you enjoyed that conversation with mayoral candidate Curtis Sliwa. He's the Republican nominee, also appearing on an independent ballot line in the general election here. If you missed any or all of the conversation, find it at Max Politics, wherever you get your podcasts, or at the Gotham Gazette website. We have an invitation out to Democratic mayoral nominee Eric Adams to come back on the program for the first time in the general election for a good in-depth conversation. So hopefully he'll take us up on that for either next week or the week after, as we get very close here to early voting and Election Day. Early voting coming October 23rd through the 31st. Election Day, Tuesday, November 2nd. Absentee balloting has already begun, along with this race for mayor and other races for citywide, boroughwide, and city council positions. There's 5 yes or no ballot questions on your ballot relating to state constitutional amendments that are being proposed. We have a lot of information on that at Gotham Gazette. But also, Thursday, 5 p.m., WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org is driving forces. And tomorrow, hosts Celeste Katz-Marston and Jeff Simmons will focus on those 5 ballot questions with 3 great guests: Rachel Holiday Smith of the news site The City, Betsy Gottbaum of Citizens Union, and Karen Blatt of the New York State Independent Redistricting Commission. Tune in for that, 5 p.m. Thursday. We will talk with you next Wednesday at 5 p.m. here on Max Politics. This is Ben Max. Talk with you soon.
Attention, please, for an important secret message in Annie's Mystery Radio Code. Get your pencils ready. Now, here's the message itself.
Well, you know that local station board meeting that I've been telling you about that takes place this Wednesday, October 13th at 7 p.m.? Well, I've been pointing people to the KPFTX website, where you can find the access information for the meeting, which will be held via Zoom. However, I've also been reliably informed that most WBAI listeners do not have a computer. So now I'm going to tell you how you can dial into the meeting yourself. By the way, the meeting is accessible to the public and includes an opportunity for public comment. So here's what you got to do. You can access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. You got that? Write it down, kids. 929-205-6099. And then you enter this meeting ID, 922.457.2995. Got that? 922.457.2995. And since that wasn't nearly enough numbers, there's also a password. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, 99.5. So it's 995.995.99. Did you get that? 995.995.99. 98.99. And we hope you will join us at the WBAI local station board meeting Wednesday, October 13th at 7 p.m.
That's all. Now remember, set your codograph for master code number 6 and figure out the secret message about tomorrow's adventure. And listen regularly for more of these exciting Secret Squadron signal sessions.
Thank you.